Hello and welcome to another episode of Butterfly Kisses, A Journey of Spiritual Transformation. I am, as always, your host, Amy Gray Cunningham. And I hope everyone is having a fabulous week and enjoying the summer. It's been so very hot here in Charlotte, which has caused many afternoon showers and thunderstorms. And unfortunately, a lot of stress for my puppies. And for those of you who have fur babies, you probably know what I'm talking about. But stress and anxiety are one of the leading causes of disease in most people. We find ourselves constantly in the fight or flight mode, and one way to help reduce stress is by meditation and mindfulness. Today's guest is a meditation and mindfulness coach. Maris Gephardt is highly regarded and a prolific teacher who specializes in corporate and individual meditation. In the first part of this episode, you will witness for yourself how she uses mindfulness techniques to help me refocus as I fumble with her introduction. It's rather interesting and pretty funny, so please bear with me on that one. But before we get started with this wonderful episode, I wanted to remind you that next Wednesday, we have another episode of Butterfly Kisses that will be available at 9 a.m. Eastern. Remember, I just started releasing two new episodes on the first and third Wednesday of each month. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking with Philip Montrose, who co-authored with his wife, Jane, The Loving Power of the Soul, which is a guided book for realizing your true purpose. We talk about how he approaches life as an amazing adventure and ways we can all process the soul. So I hope you will join me on Wednesday, July 20th for this next episode of Butterfly Kisses. Also, if you like what you hear, please subscribe on Apple or whatever app you're using to listen to this podcast. And also follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. All the links are provided in the show notes. And you can also subscribe to my weekly newsletter. These are all great ways to get notified when a new episode is released so you won't miss it. So now with that said, let's get on with today's conversation with Maris Gephardt. Today we are joined by Maris Gephardt, founder of Opulent Mindfulness. She comes to us with 22 years of yoga experience, Theravada experience, psychology, philosophy, and professional experience. And she struggled with her own bouts of anxiety and using the drawing on all of this experience, she used this. I'm sorry, this is not coming out.
Don't worry.
And Chuck, I hear him laughing at me. He's like, bleh, 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 bleh. Okay. Today we are joined by Maris Gephardt, who is the founder of Opulent Mindfulness. She is a mindfulness coach who draws on 22 years of yoga experience, Ayurvedic experience, psychology, philosophy, and she is highly regarded and a prophet teacher. She's a highly regarded teacher and thought leader. I apologize. I am not normally this stumbling over my words.
It's okay. This is part of the thing he's trying to teach you, right?
Yes, and I'm so glad that I can edit this out. And I'm
not on autopilot, right? So I think we get into autopilot mode, and instead being in the very presence of each word, feeling it, seeing it, understanding it, experiencing it, and then delivering it in your own natural way.
Yeah.
So internalize it a little bit so it's integrated into you.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to another episode of Butterfly Kisses, A Journey of Spiritual Transformation. I am your host, Amy Gray Cunningham. And today we are joined by Maris Gephardt, who is the founder of Opulent Mindfulness. She, drawing on 22 years of yoga and Ayurvedic psychology and philosophy and professional experience, has struggled with her own bouts of anxiety. Maris is a highly regarded and prolific teacher. She's a thought leader and expert in the field of corporate and individualized meditation. She accepts clients from all around the world. And actually today she's in Italy, believe it or not. So she's coming to us from around the world, which is really kind of cool.
So we're going to be talking a lot about mindfulness, centering ourselves, putting ourselves in the moment, and what that looks like. And Maris, tell us, what is it like for you when you're working with people? How do you bring us into the moment? You just helped me actually bring me into the moment and help get me centered, which thank you, by the way. But how do you do that so eloquently and easily? I mean, that was just phenomenal how you did that with me.
Well, I'll do it right now myself. We are a human body living a very human experience with all of our sensorial input. And so we're completely stimulated, distracted, and experiencing every second of every waking moment, and even during dream phase as well. So when we can tap into the simultaneity of the awareness, one of my great teachers shared that expression, so I reshare it. This is when we know the cars are driving outside, my stomach's grumbling, I'm a little bit sweaty because I'm nervous. The sun is shining, the birds are chirping. I had some really nice dark chocolate right before our visit here today. And so all these things are happening. And when we drop into that connected instant of presence, then we're in our authentic experience, our authentic selves, and we can come through and guide from that deeper place of wisdom versus a topical, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is all the noise people are hoping to hear. This is what is expected of me. How can I hear it for them? That's right where the transition happens, because we want to be thoughtful with our words in a way that is going to serve others, at the same time come from my own true space. Does that make sense?
Perfectly said. That's exactly what happened.
You, anything I could have said, you would say it perfectly said. You're very supportive, good listener person.
For those of you who did not notice a few moments ago, I was introducing Maris and totally stumbling over my words as I was doing that. And we did a retake on that several different times. And she actually helped me center myself for there for a second. And I was able to refocus and get right to the point. And it really helped. And thank you for that, actually. So, you know, how did you discover meditation and mindfulness, and, you know, what led you down this path?
So in that bio you read about me, I think the last thing in kind of the first sentence was about psychology and philosophy. So I'm a very heady person. So I started with the thinking and the observation and the awareness and stress, right? As a child, like having lots of turmoil and transition in my home. Growing up, I had to really root down into who I am. But as children, right, we don't know who we are. We don't even know to ask the question, who am I? It's just what's happening and how do we survive and how do we get through? So I led with head and curiosity and learning and watching people, wondering to understand, how do they do it? How am I supposed to get through this? Why does it seem so easy for them? Why are they having a difficult time? So really, truly, the exploration of how to navigate the world in my own way and understanding with the tools I've been given and the family I was dropped into, as we mentioned before recording, and just synthesizing all this into a way. My roots, for sure, my Catholic roots, especially being in Italy, are really highlighted, but play a serious role in the work I do, because much of Catholic belief system is steeped in service. So I really believe in service, and I'm going to be giving a presentation a little later today. And my focus is going to be recharge. So when we serve too much, we are completely drained, burned out, and we might not be riding that wave of inspirational service, moved service, compelled, emoted service. We're more in a, I should do this to be a good person. I have guilt. I've seen people do this. Everyone else is doing this, right? So that's a burnout phase level of service. And my father said a really smart thing, and I've remembered it. When you feel pity for yourself, it's a sign that you're giving out too much. And that balance of self-serve, soothing, healing, nurturing is depleted because you're so focused on the external outside. And especially in this world of social media, where it's all about the image and the picture and the external validation, we're completely deplete within our own experience of internal validation, internal acceptance, and an internal source of energy.
That is really good advice. When you feel pity, you're giving too much of yourself.
Because in our Western culture, I mean, I'm in Italy, it's still Western, I'm Western. And I had a call with a guy that just this week, and he's like, well, I grapple with meditation and self-care because it's selfish. And yet, it just isn't. Yes, we can start reflecting into our navel and get all consumed and carried away. And in that, that's ego, that's fear, that's small instead of the bigger, larger. It's important that I am joyful, because when we see joyful people, it's contagious. They share that joy. It gets on us. It gets in us. And then we, in turn, become joyful and serve and give and feel restored and fueled by their joy. So it's important that we practice a level of self-care, self-nurture, and not feel the guilt about it.
Joyful people are contagious. Be contagious.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Good nuggets. Ooh, you're giving me some good nuggets today. I love it. Yes. So
are sad people.
That's true.
Depleted people, burnt out people, people who are negative and feel lack. And I mean, I'm talking to myself here. It's not, you know, we all have those phases. Why me? Why don't I have enough? If only this, right? We get into this song and dance about pity, and then, okay, turn it around. I have so much. I am grateful. Look at all that I have. I'll just pause for a moment, soak in all the massive abundance around me, the smell of the flower, the warmth of the sunshine, just the simplicity. It takes miles and miles and miles around this earth, kilometers, 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 rotations of the earth. And then we arrive at simplicity. So either I can help save you this, you know, travel, and it'll be interpreted today and now, or you're still on that quest for finding your simplicity. But in the end, it is simplicity that will give us most joy.
So you also work with corporations in meditation. I mean, do you find that a lot of corporations like to work with you? Do they find it as important in their culture, meditating?
They dread it. They hate it. They can't stand it. I mean, part of that is true, because it is uncomfortable to show up for meditation. Yet everyone values it, believes in it. I listen to a lot of podcasts, admittedly. So I have a lot of teachers, and I pick and choose what I want to draw from their wisdom, what speaks to me, what resonates with me, what starts to piece together my whole message, my story, my belief system, my value system. And there's one that I especially appreciate. This is Lewis Howes with the School of Greatness. And he interviews all kinds of experts, really superior in their fields, mostly millionaires, you know, multimillionaires. That's really not the point I want to make. The point is, because that's how he does some of his filtering. But some of the gurus he's interviewed, and just business owners and people and successful in their fields, again, all meditate. So that's not why I go to Lewis, but that is what comes out of every single interview I listen to with him. These people all meditate. So it reaffirms my value, appreciation of it. People who are wealthy or not, everywhere in between, meditation guides them. It's their own personal imprint for what is channeling through them, their purpose, their mission, their work, their own brand, right, as a human being in this planet, in this lifetime, in this fleshy body. So I'm informed by some of these experts, and meditation is just a thing that needs to happen. And so I'm able to usually impart this to corporations, and sometimes it's led by the CEO who says, hey, this is the culture we want. We're going to do this. Sometimes it comes from HR. Hey, we really want you to feel well and cared for, so you care more about your work. And so we're offering this self-care service. And so you're welcome to join. Open. It's a suggestion and an open offering, not a forced mandate by any stretch. Yeah, and those who attend are really solid, committed, extracting valuable practices and considerations and absolute rewiring of this gray matter between ears and changing their lives. I have all kinds of testimonials I could share.
Why do you think meditation works so well?
Because it's not a quick fix.
Interesting.
And it's personal and you can't do it wrong. And it's simple and it's free and it's accessible. And it's past the test of time. It's practiced by all kinds of, you know, religious, economic, geographic, cultural, racial, sexual orientation kind of boundaries. And it's really just the exploration of me, I, you, who am I? And so though we want to pretend we aren't thinking about ourselves, we're all really thinking about ourselves a lot. So anytime we can explore more, what is this about me and my life and who I am and this, it's kind of interesting. And there's never an end. And the mind is the final frontier. So we'll never be bored with it. I've been doing this yoga for 23 years, meditation, of course, all that time because Shavasana is meditation. Yoga is a moving meditation. And I'm yet to be bored. Or know everything or have figured it all out.
You say that you can't do meditation wrong. What do you mean by that?
So, you know, maybe I'm thinking about my outfit. Maybe I'm thinking about what my sister said to me 12 years ago. Maybe I'm thinking about, will I be able to pay the bills when I retire? You know, whatever worries are my own personal worries. Those are coming. Those thoughts are happening. But the act of sitting through the discomfort, right? We're twitchy bodies and beings. Our bodies like to stay in motion. Our brains like a job, and that is to think, just like our heart is designed to pump. It wants that job. It will do that job. And so we sit through it. So just the practice of sitting and becoming aware, and maybe 20 minutes in, you're like, whoa, I'm sitting here and I just am now realizing it, right? We've had so much busy noise thoughts transmitting through the mind. So you can't do it wrong in that any kind of shining a light on the thoughts, awareness, building that skill set to become keen to our surroundings and our interiority is just golden transformational practice.
So do you have to quiet the thoughts? I mean, is that
no? Absolutely, big N-O, no. The thoughts will get very loud when we turn down the outside volume and tune inward. They get loud and they get fast. So because they're always happening. We're just now giving them space to air out, be seen, and acknowledged so that we're not owned by them, dragged and tethered down and fluctuating so much. I was taking a class this morning and it's a very emotional release kind of class called The Class, very physical, demanding class. And the woman who's the teacher talked about when you get uncomfortable in these burpees, right? That's just a weather pattern. It's just a little thunder, but your sky is still clear. It's constant. It's open. It's vast. It's present. It's just a little weather pattern interfering with your comfort level, but you're aware of it. So that alone is the practice. What's talking to you? My gut hurts. I'd rather take a drink of water. Why did I get out of bed to do this? You know, so all the conversations are happening and just getting very intimate with yourself on that.
So if the goal isn't to quiet the thoughts and the goal is to get intimate with the thoughts, what the thought, I mean, you just sit there and think about the thoughts or?
Okay. So that's a great question. I can tell you're really like processing this as if you're doing it. So that is the time where we acknowledge the thoughts. We don't engage the thoughts or identify with the thoughts. Oh, I feel sad. And by the way, thoughts, 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. Yes. Most of them ruminatory, repeated, recurring thoughts, and they're textured with emotions. So they're really embedded in our limbic system that is traveling through our body and landing in form of physical pain, discomfort, tension, knots, stomach aches, heart palpitations, dry mouth, shortness of breath. These emotions trigger a stress response. So when we are in the meditation, noticing the thoughts, we give those thoughts that have been stored up and stuffed down and put on the back burner, back shelves, because all day we're having experiences and thoughts are coming up. We can't address them, process them, and clear them all out in real time. So the meditation is that time where those past compressed thoughts, emotions, experiences finally have a chance to be seen, heard, aired out. We just witness them lightly, witness without attaching, without, like I said earlier, identifying. So, oop, there's a sad thought. There's a sad emotion. There's a happy emotion. Am I happy? Am I sad? No, I am a human body in this mind, this fleshy existence on earth. I'm just experiencing these passing through right now. Because to identify with them takes us high and low and on this weather pattern that's now not just out there, it's in us and creates all kinds of oscillations and disturbances.
So you just let them float on by? And
I mean, sometimes we won't even know we're processing it and thinking about it and figuring it out and maybe getting even to an answer. So let that happen. Let it happen. Let it happen. And that's why in meditation, wisdom speaks to us. But often, mostly, the wisdom speaks not during, but after, because we've given ourselves a chance to air out all that. Like, think about telephone wires and like your two ears are the posts. You've got wires between them. Static. Now, when we get off the meditation cushion, that's when we get that clarity away from the static. And so then the wisdom speaks to us. A sentence might just pop out. You're doing the dishes and you're like, oh, yeah, that's the answer I was looking for. And the difficult thing is, what is the question?
Yes, I was just getting ready to ask that. Very interesting.
You're a mind reader. Look at you.
So how long do you normally meditate for?
Well, I try to aim for 20 minutes in the morning after I've done my exercise. And ideally, we don't check our social media, emails, communications, text, whatever, WhatsApp, for the first 90 minutes of the day. Sometimes I'm good at that. Sometimes I'm not, but my day always goes better when I follow that rule, because I'm not letting someone else's words or needs or opinions dictate my state of well-being. And this week, I'll just share with you, I have a new theme every week for our live sessions. This week, the title is called, This Is It. This Is It. What if this was it? This moment, this taste, this place, this life, everything I have, I don't have. What if that was it? Okay, now we might be going, but I want a glass of wine after work. I want to go on a vacation. I want to engage with some friends. I want a new shirt. I want a new car. Right? All the wanting. I don't like this feeling. I want to get out of it. I want to change my interior feeling. What if that was it though? That's it. And finally, like halfway through the week with this theme, because I'm also experiencing the question or the statement or the consideration, this is it. I journaled this morning about this is it. Okay. And it's uncomfortable, and I don't like it, and I wish it was better, and I want this, but if this was it, I know I can get through it. I know it's a little uncomfortable, but I can tolerate that, and it's okay. And if I start with that as my baseline, then everything else is just golden, sparkly. Wow, how special. I don't have that discomfort. I don't have that longing. I connected with someone, I smiled, and it just felt illuminating with him. So, you know, Buddhist, which is not really my line of thinking, line of study and practice, but the Buddhism will tell us that life is suffering, right? So we're starting with that as a baseline. So anything above that is golden, special, magic, and peace. Expectation can really taint our ability to feel joy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How can meditation help with anxiety and depression? And obviously it will have an effect on your mood. So it helps to raise your vibrational levels.
Yes.
So there's benefits in that respect. if somebody has been depressed for many, many years and has been on medication, can meditation help them actually reverse that?
Yes. So I'm a bit frustrated with the pharmaceutical world because they just can't wait to get people on meds. Mm-hmm. I was facing a very high anxiety, really even call it depression situation, decade ago. And so the question was, should I go on meds or maybe meds? So I chose meditation versus medication, and it has made all the difference for me. And I've not been in other people's shoes to know how heavy a situation might feel, depression, anxiety, but I know for myself, uncomfortable, scared, shaking, clawing at the sheets. When is everything going to be okay? Fearful, trembling, fuzzy in my head. Yeah, I just go back to the shakes, like a stomach ache all the time. All the time. It gives me it takes my breath away even just thinking about it. So I turned to meditation, and it was just those 3 or 5 minutes where I would walk my dog, sit on this hill as the sun was coming up, the warmth of the sun, sometimes gray, whatever, on my face. I paused, and in that spot, I felt safe. And the world is going to be okay. And it was a very short window, but it gave me a glimpse into how can I spread this out, and link together more of those 3 minute segments until the yucks and the detracting and kind of getting into the dramas and calling that in or engaging it were no longer interesting because I'm big on replacement theory, right? If I'm spending time in heart opening and awareness and softness and safety and love cultivation and nurturing and connecting with others and giving love, that then you just push out the attraction for yuck. I mean, yes, we're human and you maybe get it 80% right. So that practice was where I began. And to this day, this week, the consideration of this, what if this was it? We think about less what I can grab out there to put in here, or how can I get out of my skin to feel better? How can I be somewhere else? We do interior energy vibration raising activities or shifts, mood shifts, energy shifts, chemical shifts in our bodies, like stand up and do some jumping jacks, go out in nature and just feel the air on your skin, smell a flower, light something that gives you a nice awakening of your senses, an incense or a candle or some essential oils. Do some breath work, shake out your body. We absolutely can interrupt, chant, sing, dance, scream, something to interrupt and reframe and realign, reignite our interior. And those tools are at our fingertips anytime. They're free, accessible, anywhere, anyone. Those things take us out of our anxious state, a depressive state, a pity state, a sense of lack, and they shift us right into gratitude and appreciation and instantly elevates us. It's easy to get caught in fear and ego and oh no and self aggrandizement and shrinking, constrictive. But I work and talk a lot about expansion and life affirming and brightening. So those things are possible. We have to actively practice, actively, proactively, even get ahead of it sometimes, right? Because when we're in that state of heavy anxiety, depression, I have no energy, right? Because emotions either lift us or physically really drain us. And we can't get off the couch or we can't get up or what's the point of anything? So important to get ahead of it. Give a thought that gives us uplifting, and then that becomes contagious.
Do you believe that sometimes or our emotions can actually cause our body's physical dis-ease or disease?
1000%. 1000%.
Do you feel that meditation and mindfulness can help move us through that?
Yes. So not only is there science to support that, meditation helps to reduce someone's perception of their pain. We have all kinds of stories recounting cancer patients who are living through excruciating, paralyzing pain. And they can take the meds and they can take meditation. And so there are placebo studies where they do meditation versus meds, and they don't know it. I mean, they know if they're meditating, but the perceived pain levels go down. So the person instantly can be moving and feeling lifted and lighter and effective and not so paralyzed and consumed with pain, because we know, I haven't personally experienced chronic pain, but I have had times where I can't get rid of a pain, but it passes and move through it, because I'm big on anti-inflammatory diets and detoxing and all this kind of thing. So, and the Ayurveda is definitely one of my go-to practices. To answer your question, yes, emotions can paralyze us. Meditation can help us have a relationship with the pain and to loosen it up. So think about a necklace or a chain that has a knot. If we lay it down on the table and then we like pull on the ends, we just tighten the knot and makes it worse. But if we lay the chain down and kind of tease out the center of the knot and let it loosen up, get some space, we're opening, seeing, unraveling, then we release that tension in there and it becomes a free and not painful center anymore.
Interesting way to look at that.
And also there's a really great leader on this subject, my grandfather, who is a physician and started drug and alcohol rehabilitation centers in the Pacific Northwest. He promoted this book, her body of work, years ago. Louise Hayes.
Yes.
So you can heal your life. So she aligns different emotions with different spots in the body that are having pain.
That, yes. I've got her book, and a very good book. Yes. She was very inspirational and a lot of healing for me personally.
Good.
Yes. So how can people work with you?
Yeah, so I do private consulting, and I like to commit to a 13-week private 1 hour, one person, same time, same day every week. And that's a 13-week up-leveling your life consulting experience. And then the core body of work I do is corporate meditation. So we have live sessions every week. Corporations subscribe and they can avail these sessions to their employees anytime. So they're just 25 minutes. They fit nicely into the work day. And when the employer is supporting this, then the employee can show up in the middle of the day and not feel guilty. Like, I should be working. Why am I doing this? Feels too good and luxurious. And sure enough, that becomes part of their work culture, and that elevates the individual. And so there, of course, it elevates the company. As well, we're doing a retreat here in Italy in October. So that's going to be a week-long movement plus meditation retreat. We'll do some village tours, wine tasting, olive orchard hikes, and it's going to be incredible.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Lots of journaling, lots of healing. We'll have a massage and different treatments. Yeah, working on the playlist. In fact, I walked over the hill the other weekend and visited the site, so it's gorgeous. And they do a lot of weddings there too. And yeah, that's the main way. I'm also doing a lot of just kind of one-off corporate public speaking engagements, for example, Wellness Week, or maybe Mental Health Month, Awareness Month, maybe an all-hands meeting. Tonight I'm doing a town hall for a company, and new fiscal year launches or product launches. So these kinds of one-off deeper dive presentations are really, I'm finding them really interesting, much good if you're not doing a routine meditation practice. So I can't really support just a one-off, but at the same time, if they want it, hey, let's go.
Well, that's awesome. So what's one tip that you can tell someone who has never meditated before, but would love to start or learn to meditate, and they'd like to get moving? What is one thing that they could start doing today that would help with meditation practice?
So before the noise of the day and the anxiety of the day penetrates your system, swing your legs, if you sleep on a bed that's off the ground, swing your legs to the edge of the bed, and sit there for 3 minutes and just pause and feel your breath, feel your body, rest your eyes, and let yourself calibrate, become grounded, centered, felt, acknowledged, seeing, and then go forth. 3 minutes, it just doesn't take long. I mean, it's more valuable. You can elevate and fast track yourself if you're doing it longer. The busier you are, the longer you need to meditate.
Yeah. I love meditating. I do. I meditate every day. And yeah. I don't know if my dogs would let me sit on the edge of the bed for 3 minutes.
Yeah. Well, scoot your back up to the backboard or whatever and just sit there with a pillow before you put your feet down. And then also, I mean, many, you know, people find meditation to be similar to prayer. I've heard the difference between meditation and prayer is talking to God, meditation is listening to God or whatever your divine mm-hmm. source is or something. So mm-hmm. that's the silence, that classroom of silence is invaluable.
Where can people find you?
Yeah, so email me anytime, maris@opulentmindfulness.com. Or text me, WhatsApp me, 500+1-503-756-3622. And I'd love to talk and just see where you are.
Well, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about?
Maybe one thing is just my own personal differentiation between meditation and mindfulness. Meditation is like going to the gymnasium, right? It's muscle work. It's hard. It's uncomfortable. It's sitting on the cushion, it's stillness, it's working through our fidgets and our like, when is this going to be over? And yeah. And then off the cushion, we can be more mindful because we're more present. We got the fidgets out of our system and now we're here. So, and mindfulness really has more Buddhist derivations, where I come from more of the Hindu yogic background and that. I'll just leave that as my own sharing to.
Well, I have one other question for you.
Sure, please.
That I ask everyone. And if you have an hour to sit on a park bench in Italy somewhere, because of course I've got to go to Italy, with someone who's either passed on or alive, and you could just pick their brain for an hour, who would it be and what would you talk about?
My dad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you for asking. That's a good one.
Well, Maris, I've had so much fun today.
Thank you, Amy. What a blessing. What a beautiful experience.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you for joining us and sharing meditation with us and the practice of it. And hopefully people will start meditating today. And
I hope so. It's the feel good that you just can't get enough of. It's great. I can't overdose on meditation.
I know. I love meditating. I love the experience of it. And I will have your website and your email and everything on the show notes. So hopefully people can reach out to you if they have questions.
Yes.
Would like to.
And anyone's welcome to be a guest anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too. Namaste.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on another episode of Butterfly Kisses, A Journey of Spiritual Transformation. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe by hitting the subscribe button. This way you won't miss it when a new episode is released. Also, if you're interested in learning more about Akashic Record readings, you can schedule a free 15-minute consultation with me by visiting my website at amygraycunningham.com. Again, thank you, and remember, always spread your gorgeous wings, my friend, and fly. Until next time, see ya.